طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. There has been a no-stop coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic by the U.S. media, particularly cable news. We hear what's going on in the U.S., Europe, China, South Korea. But what do we hear about Palestine? Here are some disturbing facts about what Palestinians are trying to do and how their military occupier, Israel, is responding. Fact: this week, Israel demolished a community clinic and emergency housing in a village in the Jordan Valley that were designated to deal with the coronavirus outbreak. Fact: this week, Israeli officials seized materials needed to form two tents for a field clinic, two for a mosque, and four for emergency housing for people evacuated from their homes, and confiscated a generator, sand, cement, and cinder blocks for the floor of the tents. Fact: Israel's military rampaged the headquarters of the emergency committee in a town north of occupied Jerusalem and assaulted the emergency workers. Fact: Israeli forces assaulted volunteers working at a Palestinian checkpoint to prevent the movement of citizens to stop the spread of coronavirus. Fact: when Palestinian schools in East Jerusalem were closing due to the coronavirus, Israeli authorities demanded that they reopen. When Palestinian youths began to sterilize buildings in the city, Israeli authorities arrested them. Israel dismantled the barriers that were erected by residents of Hebron to examine Palestinian workers coming from Israel in an effort to prevent spread of the virus. Fact: this week, the Israeli military destroyed numerous wells in the occupied West Bank. We have 24/7 news coverage in the United States, but we do not hear the stories about the continuing Israeli military oppression, even when it concerns the spread of the COVID-19 virus, a worldwide pandemic. Sad. Okay, on to our feature presentation. In February, a federal lawsuit filed in Washington, D.C. by 13 Palestinian and American activists accuses President Donald Trump and his Middle East advisor, Jared Kushner, of violating Palestinian civil and human rights. Also named in the suit are Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Miriam Adelson, the wife of billionaire settler financier Sheldon Adelson, Israeli lobby group, the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, APAC, and 13 others. The action targets Trump's deal of the century, along with laws introduced in 28 American states that illegally deny Americans the right to boycott Israel. filed on behalf of 13 plaintiffs, including the Palestinians living in America and in occupied Palestine. The lawsuit argues that they were stripped of their legal and civil rights, not only in Israel, but by American officials and activists empowered by a biased media and political system. Today's program features attorney Martin McMahon, whose high-powered Washington, D.C. law firm is litigating the case. In this presentation, McMahon takes us through the litigation and explains, in layman terms, the issues at stake in the case. Here is attorney Martin McMahon.
We're going to cover a number of topics. Hopefully we'll be able to answer some questions about a lawsuit that we recently filed. I thought a press conference would be appropriate because this lawsuit contains about four different lawsuits, and I'll walk you through it. If anybody has any questions, we have some index cards, or you can simply stand up, speak to attorney Richard Sanzer or to Tess Rose, and we'll get you on camera and you can identify an organization you're with. When I say that there are four lawsuits in one, I will try to break that down for people who don't have a legal background. But somewhere around 1900, it became very popular for colonial powers to invade territories and claim ownership of them. For example, in Algeria, there were hospitals for the French. There were highways for the French. There were schools for the French. And in fact, not many people know that we invaded Hawaii around 1900. And the first thing we did is we got rid of all the Hawaiian textbooks. Then we got rid of all the Hawaiian teachers. Then we got rid of all the Hawaiian government officials. And the goal here was to denationalize and dehumanize the civilian population in the territory that we've invaded. So the first part of this lawsuit is devoted to explaining how, with $2 billion that comes from American, Jewish, and Christian evangelicals every year, how Netanyahu was able to launch in 1998, I believe, an ethnic cleansing and then a genocide campaign. Without the funds coming from America, it wouldn't have been possible. So he wanted to denationalize the Palestinian people. They don't have a culture. It's an invented people. There never was a state of Palestine. Hard to believe there wasn't a state of Palestine when Netanyahu stands up and says, we control Palestine. Hard to believe there wasn't Palestine because Ben-Gurion in 48, when he stole Palestine, said that you must understand, my friends, we stole the country of Palestine. Now, he also said that as soon as we get a capable army going, we're going to take over all of Palestine. So it is my thesis in 48, he stole two countries. Israeli proper, fine. You're entitled to that. But he also stole Palestine. The reason you steal Palestine is in 1898, the World Zionist Congress was deciding which country would be the new Jewish homeland. We need a country with biblical roots, Palestine. We need a country that doesn't have an army, Palestine. Palestine. And we need a country that kind of the world has forgotten about. So Palestine satisfied all that criteria, and sure enough, since 1898, and there are cases in Great Britain, nonprofits were established to insert Jews into the new Jewish homeland. So because Ben-Gurion wanted to steal two countries in 48, Netanyahu decided somewhere around, I think it was 1996, that we had to get rid of all the non-Jews, including Christians, in the OPT. So the first part of the lawsuit is to try to educate people about the concept of denationalization. You're basically using denationalization to tell somebody you're meaningless, you're not worth anything, your culture's not worth anything. And today, unfortunately, that's the issue, or that's the case today in Palestine. Palestinians have no sense of self-worth. They've been told by Netanyahu, we have quotes in the lawsuit, you're not human enough for us to care about you. So, given the financial support of the defendants who we sued, along with Netanyahu's ethnic cleansing and genocide campaign, you have today basically a situation where the civilian population in the occupied territory has been denationalized, which means basically that they're forgotten people. There's no, for example, AIPAC group in Washington, D.C., to promote the cause of Palestinians. And that is a big concern. So the first part of the lawsuit is denationalization. And what it means is that you are a forgotten people. I have an article here. No one ever heard about this, but May 18th, May 15th, 2018, published informed consent. Comment. Reporter Juan Cole, a very well-known guard, wrote of the 55 peacefully protesting Palestinians who were killed by Israeli snipers in a single day. So for the last 3 years, 300 or 400 Palestinians have been murdered. Why? Because they're demonstrating at the Gaza border. That's a direct result of a policy that Netanyahu implemented. He had two or three famous policies. One, husbands and wives, Palestinians, can't live together. You know why? Because they would create what he refers to as snakes. Snakes are Palestinian children. So if you don't let the Palestinian husbands and wives live together, well, gee, you don't have a lot of Palestinians in the occupied territory. Number two, his famous policy is shoot first. Three, he has a policy which his military people have condemned, a bullet for every Palestinian kid. And he's done some other things with his policies, and it's all designed to denationalize and dehumanize the Palestinian population, and they've done a hell of a job. The second lawsuit within the four parts is you have, and we're talking about Sheldon Adelson, very wealthy people here in D.C. or in America. They have basically aided and abetted the establishment of an apartheid regime in the occupied territory. Now, that's not Martin McMahon's opinion. Famous Attorney General for Israel 40 years ago said, we have an apartheid condition in the occupied territories. And you'll see, if you read the lawsuit in the second part, there's overwhelming evidence about an apartheid condition. What it means is when Palestinian women come to checkpoints, and there's a book that we cited by a Jewish American author, Witness in Palestine. Palestinian women pregnant are stopped, they're pulled out of a cab, and they're told to lie on the road and deliver their children. The 16-year-old kid with pimples in the Israeli army, new recruit, he's just so excited because he has a chance to feel up Palestinian women. They have to undress at the checkpoint. Also, I think 14 or 15 infants during the last 10 years died at those checkpoints. So if you have a kid who has appendicitis and you want to go through that checkpoint, forget it. It'll take you 10 hours. Your son will be dead. So apartheid lets you do that. Apartheid lets settlers tell Palestinian kids, you forgot your national ID card? Well, you have to eat sand. Or I tell you what, come over here. And he puts out his cigarette on the scalp of a Palestinian kid. So apartheid allows you to do a lot of nasty stuff, and it's never reported. And then we stop every effort to allow Amnesty International to come in and investigate this stuff. So because there's an apartheid regime established in the occupied territories, no one hears about things. No one cares about the Palestinians. And yet today, you have kids in Palestine who, with butter knives, attack border guards. One kid said, I have to choose something. Do I commit suicide by attacking a soldier at the checkpoint? My father died 10 years ago, murdered. My mother's in prison. My brother left. I have nothing here. The settlers have defecated in my water supply system. I don't have a life. What do I do? So you'll read, as I read almost every day, Palestinian kid with a butter knife decides that he's going to attack a border guard. So apartheid lets you do a lot of nasty stuff. And it is clear that that's been going on for quite a long time. Part of the lawsuit is what I thought would be very interesting. We are seeking a ruling that because of policies that Prime Minister Netanyahu has adopted in the OPT, that he's a war criminal. It's a very easy exercise because war criminals do a lot of nasty stuff, of course, and they commit war crimes. So you look up the definition of war crimes, and you see that Netanyahu has committed at least 20 war crimes. So he's no doubt he's a war criminal. And I don't know why we support war criminals, but anyway, the third lawsuit is a court that's going to say he's a war criminal. Now that's going to affect him in a lot of ways. There's a group in London getting ready to indict him as a war criminal. There's a group in Belgium. Z.P. Livni, I think her name is. She's a deputy minister in Israel. Can't travel to Europe anymore. The reason is Belgium has taken out an arrest warrant for her as a war criminal. Doing exactly, well, I shouldn't say exactly, doing maybe 20% of what Netanyahu does as a war criminal. So eventually, if we're successful, people in the world are going to say, he's a war criminal. We don't want him visiting our country. So I would predict a lot of bad things are going to happen to him if we're successful. Somebody asked me, why are you bringing a lawsuit against Bibi Netanyahu as a war criminal. It's because unless somebody stops Bibi Netanyahu, and most Jewish Americans, I think, now feel the same way, the repressive apartheid regime will simply continue. And more Palestinians will be murdered. And so far, Netanyahu has stolen 4,400 square miles of Palestinian property. Amazing. Now, the fourth part of the lawsuit I find to be very interesting. As you all know, Kushner was tasked with coming up with this great peace plan. If you read the details, 18 years ago, this is the identical peace plan that was offered at Camp David. There's a $50 million, $50 billion bribe now. That's the big difference. But there's a great book on the Trump presidency. What's that title called, Tess?
Fire and Fury.
Fire and Fury, you're in. And there's Ben, Steve Bannon, talking about the agenda that President Trump has and all the bad stuff he's going to do to the Palestinians. But anyway, on the fourth cause of action, you have a situation. If no one stops Kushner's peace plan from going into effect, anybody who owns real estate, and we have a number of clients who do, in the occupied territories, their property claims are extinguished. They don't exist anymore. So one of the undisclosed objectives of that peace plan is to declare that Israel owns all of the occupied territories. Now, the interesting question is if you research international law, which I've done extensively. In 1948, there was a actum separatum doctrine. There was President Truman's Jerusalem doctrine. Well, if you go back and read all these things, you see that Jerusalem, for example, is a holy city. You can't touch it, even if your name is Mr. Kushner. So it's illegal what they're trying to do in terms of saying that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. And it's illegal for them to say that I have the right to transfer 4,400 square miles of Palestinian territory. If you go back and look at the case law and international law, Article 73, UN Charter, it recites that Netanyahu has a fiduciary duty to the citizens in the occupied territory, that is the Palestinians. In other words, I have a fiduciary duty to protect the lives and assets of every Palestinian citizen. Instead of protecting the lives and assets of the Palestinian people, he has murdered a lot of them. He has stolen a lot of the property. See, he conveniently uses bad guys. And that's written up in our lawsuit. The settlers have become Netanyahu's guerrilla army. They go out and maim and murder Palestinians. Now, people will say, well, how do you know that? Well, 700 Israeli veterans are part of a movement called Breaking the Silence. They published a book, Harsh Logic. You cannot read that book without understanding what has been going on in the occupied territories. Aim for the eyes of the Palestinians. I want to see Palestinian bodies. Young kids are told, if you want a promotion, you're going to have to kill 100 Palestinians, put notches on your rifle. And the most egregious thing is, hey, We'll protect you. Put your revolver in the mouth of an injured Palestinian. Pull the trigger, blow his brains out. So these guys now, and women, have taken to YouTube. And if you ever see anything for breaking the silence, you watch it for 20 minutes and you say, oh my God. Now, in 1990, a famous Pulitzer Prize winner wrote The Gaza Diary. 1990, what is that, 40 years ago? And he said, I've never seen an occupied army killing 12-year-olds for sport. And what galls me is that there are people like Mr. Gilbert, Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers. He sends $5 million every year to the Israeli army. That money goes to maim and murder Palestinians, do a lot of nasty stuff. So you knew as far back as 1990, courtesy of that book, courtesy of a lot of things, what was going on in the occupied territories. So our thesis is that if you knew what was going on in the occupied territories and you're sending $5 million over there so that these settlers can buy sophisticated equipment, jeeps, stun grenades, you have aided and abetted the commission of war crimes and you are a collaborator. It's not my opinion. That's the opinion of the American judges and the British judges at the Nuremberg trial, 1945. So our thesis is that most, if not all, of the defendants are basically collaborators. Now, one of the questions I get frequently is that Governor Cuomo has been named in this lawsuit. And most people say, gee, what did he do? He's the governor of New York. Great guy, you know? So I say, yeah, he's a great guy. I admired his father. I knew his father because he sat next to my friend who supervised me and taught me how to practice law a long time ago. It was funny that both my friend and Cuomo went to law school at St. John's and were not qualified enough to be shishi litigators in New York, but that's for another story. Anyway, Cuomo has decided and has made a lot of money doing this and has never registered as a U.S. agent. He now requires that if you wish to criticize the occupation or you wish to denounce Netanyahu as a war criminal, you must first of all execute a loyalty oath to Israel, at least with respect to New York State. But he's taken it a few notches up. He and Giuliani have now convinced Congress to have what is called a federal anti-BDS statute. So it used to be that in 28 states, if you criticized Israel, you could get maybe a $30,000 fine, 4 years in jail. I mean, it was pretty serious stuff. Now it's all over the country because of federal legislation. So Palestinian Americans always thought, gee, there's one country where you can go and say, you know, I oppose Israel. I oppose apartheid. I oppose all the terrible things that have been inflicted on the Palestinians. Well, no more. And Cuomo's best friend, Rabbi Haykind, he doesn't believe that Palestinians are real people. And I guess this is what comes down to in terms of denationalization. You call them beasts, lice. You call them animals. The ability to look at a occupied population as beasts and animals, you know what that does? It means that it's so easy to kill these people because they aren't people. So I don't know why Attorney Richard Sands and I, well, the only two lawyers in Washington, D.C., that know that the U.S. State Department has a code of genocide. And President Trump, Netanyahu, all of the people in our lawsuit have violated the U.S. State Department's genocide manual. And I've said to Richard a number of times, why doesn't anybody else know about the fact that the State Department has a genocide manual? And kind of if you violate that, you can't get U.S. foreign aid, among other things. But it seems that Israel gets a pass on everything. If you read our remarks about AIPAC, the first task AIPAC has is to make sure that Jewish Americans and Christian evangelicals are not punished for criminal behavior. We have a table showing 8 federal criminal statutes that they violate. 18 U.S. Code 960, can't fund a foreign army. 18 U.S. Code, I think it's 1956, you can't send money overseas to maim and murder a foreign population. And there are 6 others, including basically tax fraud. The joke, which everybody knows about, is that Adelson has given $50 million to an illegal settlement called Ariel, and he has taken $50 million in tax write-offs. So the American taxpayer has been funding the settlement enterprise and has been funding genocide, which violates the U.S. State Department's manual. So there's a lot more I can get into, but basically the fourth cause of action is pretty important. And unless somebody wakes up and sees what it's all about, that peace plan is going to go through. And anybody who owns real estate in the occupied territories is going to be impacted by that. And the funny part of that peace plan, and our relief is, Judge, send this to the UN General Assembly, you know. The funny part about that peace plan is the law is very clear that an occupier, he could be there for 1,000 years. He doesn't gain any ownership rights. He's an occupier. So he has nothing to transfer. So Kushner is illegally transferring property. And again, as a result, anybody that owns real estate in the occupied territories is affected. But if you go back and look at research, it's clear that an occupier has no ability to transfer property. Now, this doesn't bother Kushner. It doesn't bother anybody. Pastor Hagee, who has sent $20 million into the occupied territories as a Christian evangelical, has advised Israeli leadership to ignore international law. So guess what? Netanyahu has ignored international law. The big thing about Netanyahu is we never signed the 4th Geneva Convention. Well, excuse me, are you a member of the UN? Yeah, I think you are a member of the UN. In fact, that's how Israel came into being. Well, if you're a member of the UN, there is this thing called Article 73, and you have a fiduciary duty to protect the assets and the lives of Palestinians. So there are 4 separate parts of this lawsuit. It's never been done before, but Judge Sinman of the Southern District of New York said, if you do what Governor Cuomo does, if you do what Engelson did, if you did what Gilbert did, you have committed a war crime. In other words, Judge Sinland said, who's well respected, that denationalization and dehumanization is a war crime. Now, that's the big burden we have, but she said it is. So all we have to do, which we have done, is lay out the conduct in the lawsuit showing that you've aided and abetted. So when you send $5 million overseas to fund the Israeli army, I think you've aided and abetted the commission of war crimes. Anyway, I'm sorry it's taken so long to make this presentation. If anybody has any questions, be glad to answer. And I think Richard could answer some questions as well. So thanks again for your rapt attention. And sorry it took so long to go through 4 separate lawsuits. I need some water. Anybody have any questions?
Mark, I'm John Healy. I'm one of the plaintiffs in the suit. Can you tell me what you expect the next step to be? Like
Probably a good question. I think Richard could answer that. Thank you, sir.
Once we serve all the defendants, I think you're an attorney, you know this, we have to go, they will answer the complaint or they'll file a motion to dismiss. And they're likely to file a motion to dismiss based on any number of things, whether it's the statute of limitations, whether they think the law doesn't apply, whether they think we haven't properly served them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that'll be the first hurdle that we have to overcome. Once we overcome motion to dismiss, we'll go into discovery and prosecute the case. It'll take probably 6 months before we get through all that because there are so many people who have to answer.
Now, we should say something, I'm sorry, about Al-Tamimi versus Adelson. There's a doctrine known as the political question doctrine. And for years, it has barred any lawsuit that the Palestinians have filed over the years. We are the first law firm to establish with the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that the political question doctrine has limitations. So when you allege that settlers are maiming and murdering Palestinians, you can proceed with your lawsuit. So on April 21st of this year, we will hold a conference, in front of Judge Chutkin. And that lawsuit's going to start, and discovery's going to start. And we'll be able to find out who's been sending millions of dollars into the occupied territories. So for the first time in judicial history, someone has successfully overcome the political question doctrine. It is difficult to understand as a layperson the significance of that. Wendell, maybe you could take a shot at that. A layperson wouldn't understand the political question doctrine.
Well, the political question doctrine essentially says that certain matters are political in nature and that therefore the courts cannot determine the correctness or incorrectness of policies that are established by the State Department, the President of the United States. And that doctrine has been used even in situations where there's a clear violation of international law or even national law. So that doctrine has been used to shield Israel and other countries from legal remedy. And in this case, the court said, well, it's different. What's been alleged in this lawsuit is different than, say, policies on climate change or on trade or on some other matter with which there's legitimate dispute among different policymakers.
So, you don't get to boast a lot about legal victories, and I'm not one to go around and put my name up on billboards, but it is quite a significant victory. It opens the door for settlers to come into this court and claim that, Palestinians, and claim that settlers have done what they've done. Maybe Richard can address the Alien Tort Statute, which a lot of people don't know about.
Okay, back to law school. The Alien Tort Statute is a statute that dates back to the piracy days in the 1700s, and it was designed to allow victims of crimes to use the federal courts to sue the people who victimized them. And the Alien Tort Statute is, we filed this lawsuit and the one before it, and another one under the Alien Tort Statute, which is basically a ticket to federal court. It doesn't bring its own causes of action. It just allows you to use the federal courts to right wrongs that have been befallen aliens, whether they're in this country or somewhere else. And that's basically what we've used in this case and in the El Tamimi case to get into federal court.
Guess which organization is trying to repeal the Alien Tort Statute?
AIPAC.
Are there anybody have any other questions?
Well,
I guess. Well, thanks for coming.
Well, I guess it's a broad one. Do you anticipate, since these are federal statutes, any particular problems from our current Department of Justice with regard to trying to file?
Well, more importantly, Department of State, we have a strategy.
Uh-huh.
Department of State has the right to file what is called a statement of interest. For example, a lot of folks didn't like the Vietnam War, so they filed lawsuits saying, I'm not going to file my tax return this year. We're fighting a war in Vietnam. I'm against it. Courts have said, no, that's, we appreciate the fact you're against the Vietnam War, but that doesn't work. So what the State Department does is file a statement of interest and say, this case falls under the political question doctrine. So if you have a bozo like Secretary of State Pompeo, he's likely to file a statement of interest about this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. However, because I have great faith in the American people that the man in the White House will no longer be there come November 4th or 5th, there'll be a different Department of State. And I think they will file a statement of interest which will at least allow some of our claims to go forward. Mm-hmm. But it's an excellent question, Marina. Mm-hmm. I don't think the American people know the significance of the political question doctrine, as Wendell has explained, but also the fact that the State Department comes in and files a statement of interest. Well, if you have a State Department that has been basically hollowed out, there's not a single, according to New York Times, there's not a single senior official at the State Department that is pro-Palestine. Every one of them have been removed or reassigned. Why? So that President Trump can do all the things he's doing. Now, one of the things we allege in the lawsuit, I'm glad you brought it up, which is amazing, we believe he was bribed and received $50 million from the Edelson family. Steve Bannon said the campaign was broke dick, and if we don't get money in, we're dead. Where did the money come from? It has to come from Edelson. Why? the one bank, Deutsche Bank, who had been funding the Donald, declined to fund him anymore. So Kushner and Bannon said, what do we do? And they embraced a bribe made by the Edelson family. So that's a significant issue. And that also affects Kushner's peace plan. There was a statute called the Federal
Foreign Corrupt Practices Act.
Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. And you can't bribe, and it works both ways, foreign official, American. You can't bribe anybody in connection with a transaction. Well, if our allegations are believed that the Adelson family bribed the president with a $50 million campaign contribution to do what he did, they violated that statute. If you violate that statute, any actions that come up as a result are null and void. So all of the stuff that Netanyahu is doing for Israel is null and void. So, damn good question.
You have been listening to attorney Martin McMahon speaking about his precedent-setting litigation at the Washington Press Club. And that is our program this week. Thank you for listening to the Palestinian Narrative on This Week in Palestine. You can hear us each week and access all our past programs by typing truthandjusticeradio.org into the browser on your computer and then clicking on This Week in Palestine Archive. Again, you can hear us each week and access all our past programs by typing truthandjusticeradio.org into your browser on your computer and then clicking on This Week in Palestine Archive. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week and every week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, hoping you will stay well.